This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear about the Kalamazoo County Land Bank's latest rehabilitation effort. The grand opening of the Riverview launch is happening today. But first, a State House committee has recommended that the full House vote to expel State Representatives Cindy Gamrat of Plainwell and Todd Corser for using state resources to cover up their extramarital affair. Gongra News Service editor Zach Gorchow joined us this morning before the committee cast its vote. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Gordon.
You wrote on your blog, the Gongra blog, after Cindy Gamrat testified before the committee, that the recommendation by the general counsel to recommend censure for Gamrat but expulsion for Corser could shape the ending. Is that still the case, or is there the possibility that the committee and ultimately the State House may do something different than what the general counsel was recommending?
No, there definitely is a real possibility that the House Republicans, or the majority in the House, will decide to set aside the legal counsel's recommendation and pursue expulsion. Ed McBroom, the chair of the committee, said this morning that he is leaning toward expulsion. It's not definitely there yet, but he was leaning toward expulsion for both of them. And just in talking to various Republican sources yesterday, it just sounds like the legal counsel, you know, may have just kind of gaffed on this and not really read or had a good sense of where the caucus was at and maybe spoke too soon.
What are they in particular concerned about when it comes to Gamrat and Corser that makes them think that, yes, they both of them have committed actions which rise to the level of being removed?
I think there's three pieces to this. One is the use of staff, or you know, attempt of use of staff to try to prevent their extramarital affair from coming to light, even though the staffer did not agree to send out the now infamous phony email that Todd Corser himself wrote to make him look bad as a way of diverting attention from the extramarital affair. And even though it didn't take place on state time or state property, it's still, you're going to your staffer who reports to you and asking him to do something unethical. And I think, you know, that's one piece. The other piece is just the rampant apparent use of official staff, taxpayer-funded staff, for political purposes, which is illegal. Discussions of Todd Corser's congressional ambitions, apparently on state time, discussions about Cindy Gamrat's bid for Republican National Committee woman on state time. That's another big piece of this. And then I think just an overarching, this isn't a reason to expel someone, but just an overarching lack of competence and chaos in their office. You add all this together, combined with their alienation of their colleagues, their total lack of respect for their colleagues, not building any alliances, and that's the recipe you have here to potentially get them kicked out.
Now, Cindy Gamrat was very contrite when she testified before this committee. She had to stop a couple times as she was crying. But she said that the House office report was essentially true. Before that, however, she had denied knowledge of the false flag email, and it said some other things which, you know, sort of contradicted what was in the report. And I guess I'm wondering if changing her story has maybe hurt her a little bit with her fellow representatives.
Well, it seems to cut one of two ways, and I don't know the answer, full answer at this point. But on the one hand, the contrition and basically fessing up to everything that's been accused, I think in some ways, helps in the sense that, you know, she's basically, you know, saying, look, I did it, I am sorry. And when it comes to these expulsion proceedings, it generally helps your cause to not be in denial. On the other hand, she's basically, you know, she pleaded guilty. I mean, this isn't a court of law, but she has basically admitted to doing all of these things. And if you're a member of the House weighing whether to vote yes or no for expulsion, and you're saying, well, you know, it's not even a they said, she said situation. It's now she agrees with everything that's been said about her. It certainly helps make the case to throw her out.
Todd Corser had been much more defiant after these allegations came out, had called this committee a kangaroo court. But yesterday when he came before the committee, he was somewhat more contrite. Let's hear just a little bit of Todd Corser from yesterday.
I have no excuse, nor can I explain the ridiculous email and the voice recordings, except to say that they were the actions of a desperate person.
So, Zach Gorchow, does Todd Corser get any credibility with the committee for being more contrite yesterday and admitting that, yes, he had done these horrible things?
They certainly did not take it with any degree of credibility. The problem for Todd Corser is there's just too many times that he has lashed out with these sort of manifesto-type emails, accusing his colleagues of all kinds of nefarious plots and conspiracies. And, Andrea LaFontaine, who's a state representative from basically kind of the Thumb area, northern Macomb County and the Thumb area, she really let him have it. Mr. Corser had talked about, this was kind of one email brought on at a desperate moment, and she basically said, I don't care if it was a desperate moment, a desperate day, a desperate month, you don't treat staff like this, and told him she basically was just hearing a lot of excuses. Ed McBroom, the chair, said, how do we know this is the real you? That there have been, could this just be another cover? Could this be an act? And I will say that, there really are, Mr. Corser can put on two very different faces. If you talk to him on the phone, if you interview him in person, there is a much less strident edge. But when he gets on Facebook, when he starts typing up the emails, it's a very conspiratorial, hard-edged tone. And so what we saw yesterday was more of what you get from Mr. Corser in person.
You actually wrote back earlier this month on the Gong War blog about the fact that Representative Kurt Heise being appointed to this committee was in a way bringing Corser's legislative story full circle. Now, explain this little history between Heise and Corser and why it is interesting and plays into this.
Well, yes. In February, at the opening of the term, in the Criminal Justice Committee of the House, where Representative Heise is the chair and Representative Corser is a member, there was a bill up for consideration. Basically, it would allow law enforcement to ping a cell phone to get its location if there was a concern that the owner or user of the cell phone was in some type of imminent danger. Think of, a child with a phone who had gone missing, allowing law enforcement to ping that phone and try to find it and so forth. So, at the outset of this meeting, I sort of wondered, boy, is Corser going to go along with this? You could just sort of see, his concerns about Fourth Amendment, Big Brother coming into the fore here. But as it turned out, they adopted an amendment of his, and then he voted for the bill. And it was a big surprise to me, and I think everybody, and as it turned out, to Representative Corser's staff, too, because apparently the plan had been that he was going to vote no on this and sort of got confused. And inadvertently voted yes. But then about a week later, as the bill was potentially going to come up on the House floor, Representative Corser sent out one of those emails, and it just, tore this bill to shreds. You would have thought that Stalin had come up with this thing, with the way he was talking about it. And he never in this email said, oh, by the way, I voted yes on it. he didn't touch it at all, didn't touch that at all. And so it was just, interesting to me that, that Heise ended up on the committee. I mean, he's an attorney and it made some sense to put him on the committee for sure. But I thought there was some irony there that, Corser had really kind of thrown Heise under the bus here with his behavior earlier in the year. And it just sort of stood as an example of how he has, really gone out of his way not to build alliances that could help with his legislative causes.
The story in the Gong War News Service today is that Democrats are reluctant to proceed with any floor votes on discipline for Gamrat and Corser, whether that's expulsion or censure. Can we read into this that it's really the Republicans right now who are more anxious to move ahead and get this done one way or another?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, based on, you know, Ed McBroom saying that he's leaning toward expulsion, based on what I was hearing from Republicans last night, that there's more energy for expulsion right now in the House Republican caucus. The House Democrats are going to have to make a decision here. If expulsion goes up on the board for a vote, on what to do. I mean, I think they feel like this process has been a mess, and I think they have some legitimate gripes as to how things have played out with this. But in the end, are they really going to go to bat for Corser and Gamrat? You know, especially when both have basically admitted to misconduct and misuse of state resources. I mean, that's going to be difficult to sustain that explanation. I mean, they want to broaden this out to the Speaker's office, and why didn't Kevin Cotter, the Speaker, and his staff do a better job of managing the staff versus legislator complaints between Corser and Gamrat and their staff? But in the end, that really doesn't have a direct role in the decision on whether Corser and Gamrat stay or go. So if I had to guess, and it is purely a guess, I think they will continue to try to beat up on the Speaker over how he handled the staffing situation here. But if once it goes up on the board, it would surprise me if there aren't enough Democrats to give this the two-thirds majority it needs for expulsion, presuming that is what this comes to. I think that would be sort of turn the focus away from the House Republicans and how they handled this, and Corser and Gamrat themselves to the Democrats deciding to spare them. And if that's what they want to do, I guess they'll own it. But it would be a difficult position for them to put themselves in.
You've mentioned the committee chairman, Ed McBroom, a couple times. I want to play just a little bit of sound from him yesterday addressing Todd Corser after Corser had testified before this House committee.
It's hard for me to accept that now is suddenly the moment when the light shines in, and I can believe that this is not another attempt at misdirection. This is not another attempt at manipulation.
And that's kind of what you're talking about there, right? That the Republicans say on this committee are saying, look, we've got the goods. And why believe, especially Todd Corser right now, that this is some sort of a credible confession and an attempt to turn himself around?
I mean, look, Corser is on tape. This is one of the recordings that his now former staffer, Ben Graham, made secretly, explaining the rationale and strategy behind this email in which, Corser wrote it, the email was written to claim that he had paid for sex with a male prostitute and was addicted to drugs and alcohol and was just generally a deviant person, you know, none of which is, true as far as we know, is all made up. And in explaining the rationale for it, said it was to be a controlled burn, that in a controlled burn, you mix in a little bit of truth with a lot of lies. And, boy, when you're caught on tape saying that you're deliberately using lies as a strategy to save your neck, if you're the committee and if you're the fellow legislators, how do you really know you can trust what Todd Corser is saying? Now, granted, what he said yesterday, he was saying under oath. If they could, if there was actually found to be something where he perjured himself, he would be in a lot of jeopardy. But nonetheless, it's difficult, I think, for the members to accept what he's saying yesterday at face value.
All right. Zach Gorchow, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Congress News Service editor Zach Gorchow was interviewed live this morning. Shortly after that segment aired, the House committee considering disciplinary action recommended that the full House vote to expel both state representatives Cindy Gamrat and Todd Corser. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A formerly blighted piece of land, which had been in tax foreclosure, is about to open up to the public in a new incarnation. Riverview Launch is located along the Kalamazoo River. It's one of the latest projects launched by the Kalamazoo County Land Bank. A grand opening celebration is set for today, if you are listening on Thursday. Kelly Clark is executive director of the Land Bank, and Perry Wolf is community bank president for Chemical Bank. He's also chairman of the Riverview Launch Capital Campaign Committee. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So once Riverview Launch is completely open to the public, up and going, what are people going to find there? What will they be able to do? What might bring people there? What might attract them?
Sure. Well, Riverview Launch, when it's open to the public, will look very different than what it did previously. The property was previously abandoned and neglected, and it's been transformed into a community space. We have walking trails, so the public can take advantage of a passive park. It's on the Kalamazoo River Valley Trail, where a number of people bike and ride. And we have a couple of different community tenants there. The Kalamazoo County Land Bank has its offices there, and Open Roads Bike Program also has its offices there. So they're expanding their reach of their programming. And then we're hosting a movie on the barn once a year and potentially increasing that as we get into subsequent years, and partnering with other agencies. For example, the Kalamazoo Watershed Council is hosting a water festival on September 19th. And Landscape Forums is hosting their fourth annual Go Places event on September 17th coming up. So we anticipate the site will be a great site for community events in partnership with other agencies. The site's also available for private rental during the day.
So Perry, give us an idea of what went into raising the money here. What did you have to do to convince people that this was a worthwhile endeavor?
Well, this has been a really fun project to work on for myself and the rest of the capital campaign. And I think why we've had such success raising funds to this date and getting the folks involved that we have is, you know, this is a site that really wasn't anybody's site. It had been orphaned. And the group of folks that came together on the capital campaign realized that this was something we needed to do. It was the right thing to do. It was our turn to kind of leave a space in Kalamazoo better than we found it. So we really set out to make this, as Kelly said, as a hallmark spot, really an example of the things that we can do as a community. And the Capital Campaign Group is really a very broad cross-section of folks from private sector to public sector to individuals themselves, and very quietly have gone about finding out that our mission to try and turn this orphaned site that really didn't have a home and give it a home and give it some purpose has been very popular, has been very well received. So we're just really, really, really tickled with how well the community has come together to support the revitalization of this site.
How much did you raise?
We raised, to date, we're at $1.9 million, which was our goal. We are at our point where we're willing to open this, or we want to open this up to the community, the greater community, to make this a true community project. And so we are looking to raise an additional $25,000. We have some matching money that's available that'll help us get to that $25,000. But we really feel like this is an opportunity for everyone in this community, whether it's $5 or $500, to become part of this project that it's not anybody's project, but it's everybody's project.
So let's go back here a little bit and give people the history. What was this property used for years ago?
The property is the site of the old Riverside Greenhouses, and they were in business for many, many years. We've been in conversation with the family associated with the Riverside Greenhouses. Unfortunately, they went out of business in the mid to late 2000s. The property's been assembled actually over 5 years, which I think is an interesting example of the land bank utilizing its land assembly tools. 5 acres were tax foreclosed by the owners in 2010, and then eventually the structures themselves foreclosed in 2012. When the greenhouse went out of business. So we have had conversations with the previous owners, and actually we've been delighted that members of the family have been out at the site at volunteer events, rolling sod, participating in the site, coming to meetings, and have been very supportive of the transformation of the site. Of course, it's bittersweet for them, but I think that they're happy to see that this site that meant so much to them for so many years is now becoming something that the whole community can enjoy and that they're a part of making.
So what sort of condition was this land in when you moved in and started work here? What had to be done to bring it up to a condition where you can actually go ahead and launch?
Well, unfortunately, by the time we entered into ownership, there had been a lot of disinvestment. So when we first started our conversations in the community to get feedback about what we should we do with this site, we really had no idea what would be the best reuse for the site. We knew that it was important because it was on the KRBT and it was on the Kalamazoo River. But other than that, we were sort of scratching our heads on a reuse plan. So we reached out and had several conversations. And what we heard from a lot of the biking community and walking community was they didn't feel safe going by the site. There was a lot of rubble, a lot of weed trees. The structures were boarded. So the first thing that we did was some selective demolition funded by a state grant from the state of Michigan. Then we also worked with the Local Initiative Support Corporation with a small grant to start doing some early repairs on a historic barn at the site. And the notion behind that was the site itself was, it was a little bit difficult to get your head around that this site could be restored into something, a community asset, and with the community vision that had been developed through all of the conversations. So restoring the barn in the early days was a way to get people out on the site and also just show them the potential. So some of the first work we did was restoring the barn with volunteers and doing some early landscaping and starting to have some pilot programming on the site in 2014, just to get people thinking differently about this space that previously we were being told people really didn't want to ride that stretch of the trail. They didn't want to walk that stretch of the trail. They didn't feel safe on it.
So in a sense, were you trying to make this a property where it was going to be maybe difficult to turn it into something useful, as opposed to what it looked like before, which was it was looked impossible to take this property and make it something that anybody would ever want to really spend any time
on. And I think that's a challenge with all of our properties at the Land Bank. We tend to have very difficult, very challenging properties, oftentimes located in areas with weak markets. So for us, being able to make small steps, we're doing some work in Washington Square in the Edison neighborhood, which is another example of that, in partnership with the Local Initiative Support Corporation and the Neighborhood Association, taking small steps, making improvements. It's also a way for us, when we do this early work, it's a way for us to bring more people in the community into the conversation. Because I think what we've realized, for example, with Riverview Launch, had our staff sat around the table and come up with a business plan or reuse plan for the site without engaging the community, it certainly wouldn't be the transformational plan with all of the features and the partners that we see. So when we're able to reach out to the community, have those conversations, and not only have a conversation in a meeting setting, but bring people to the site and start doing small things together, we've been able to build new partnerships, get more ideas, and really have expanded vision that I think in the case of Riverview has resulted in a very stunning site that we wouldn't have had we, as a team in our office, worked on this on our own.
Perry, let me ask you, as someone who is sort of a volunteer here yourself as part of the campaign committee, do you sort of look at this sort of thing and say, well, it is a big job, but I also want to be involved with something at the end of the day, which is going to be able to be successful? You don't want to, I guess, tilt at windmills here, for lack of a better phrase.
When Kelly first approached me to be part of the capital campaign, as Kelly said, it's hard to have that vision of what this is going to look like. I knew that as a lifelong Kalamazoo resident, I had to do something. I'm at a point in my life where I need to start giving back to this community, showing my kids what it takes for a community to thrive, and what it takes is for people to be active and to become involved. And I'm a fan of the outdoors. I'm a fan of rivers and water. And so this kind of fit right in my wheelhouse with something that I was challenged that I think I was up for. And Kelly and her staff have just done a tremendous job of helping move this project through the continuum from no funding to where we are today with what it would appear to be such ease, but I know that's come with a lot of hard work. So for me, it's been one of these things where it's just, it was my turn, and I want to make sure my kids understand that these are the things that you have to do in a community to make it successful.
So you mentioned before that there's a challenge, Kelly, whenever you start deciding which projects you're going to take on.
Take us through that a little bit. Why does, you know, Riverview Launch make the cut? Even though, as you say, when you started off, you looked at this property and you had people tell you they didn't even feel safe going by it. So how do you make the determination that, yes, this is one we're going to do? And it may mean that, others have to wait.
That's a good question. That's always a very difficult challenge for us because we are typically in a position where there are more disinvested properties than we have resources to deal with. And we have tried to be strategic about our work so that we can be impactful and not be overwhelmed with our inventory. I think the biggest factor here was the location on the KRVT and the Kalamazoo River. So, as I mentioned, this parcel was assembled over 5 years. In 2010, we received 5 acres of green space, and we knew that they were important. We didn't really know what was going to make sense there. We were very busy administering stimulus dollars. But then in 2012, when the structures actually foreclosed, then we thought, gosh, now here's another acre with structures, a historic barn, a greenhouse. We really are not sure what a reuse plan would look like, but it feels like this is a really important property for the community. So that's why we decided to start having conversations with folks. And we started with one-on-one conversations. We reached out to partners like the Kalamazoo Nature Center, the KRVT. We reached out to individuals that live in the disinvested neighborhoods that we work, many of whom live nearby this parcel. And we had coffees and breakfasts and just asked for ideas and thoughts. And it was interesting, even though those early conversations were one-on-one, we kept hearing the same themes. Gosh, people have been working on the river for decades, and they've been working on the KRVT for decades. So if you can do something there that really helps to elevate those two assets in our community, that would be really something special. So we followed that up with some charrettes and open houses and continued community conversation until eventually a business plan was developed that we could start having a capital campaign around and then start the process of procuring an architect and a construction contractor and also involving volunteers at the site.
Perry, if someone still wants to help out on that last $25,000 you want to raise, what should they do?
Well, we're starting a Fundly site, so our goal is the $25,000, and I would invite anyone and everyone to be part of this project because it is a true community project. We'll be accepting donations online at www.fundly.com/Riverview-launch, and we'll be able to share the results of our larger campaign at the community gathering here this afternoon at the Riverview Launch, but really are encouraging the greater community to become involved in what will be a really neat community project and something they can all be proud of.
And Kelly, tell us a little bit more about what's happening this afternoon.
So this afternoon, the event is from 4 to 7. We'll have some background music. Millennium Restaurants has graciously donated appetizers. We'll have yard games, and the Youth Advisory Board from Open Roads will be leading activities. At 5:30, we'll have a brief program. We'll have some remarks from folks talking about the project. And then from 6 till 7, Northern Fires will be performing. Other things that will be going on will include a scavenger hunt for kids and adults alike, and an opportunity for folks to view the buildings. The buildings will be open, so folks will be able to come inside. There's a lot of interesting architectural features in the building, including the use of deconstructed lumber from homes that had to come down, and be able to view the grounds as well. So the event is open to the community, and we'd really like to share the space with the community, so we encourage folks to come on down.
Kelly Clark and Perry Wolf, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kelly Clark is Executive Director of the Kalamazoo County Land Bank. Perry Wolf is Community Bank President for Chemical Bank. He's also the Chairman of the Capital Campaign for the Riverview Launch Project. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.